When I asked a couple of my friends from Ireland to join us on the show to talk about their country's legends of fairies and banshees and things that go bump in the night, they were a little reluctant at first. I thought it was because they didn't want to appear superstitious or maybe out of date. And that's what they wanted me to believe. But I wonder if they weren't just a little afraid. Coming up today on Travel with Rick Steves, we hear how the Irish accommodate tales they grew up with of fairy folk lurking in their surroundings, and why they're testing their luck right now by making an exception to talk openly about it with us. We'll also explore San Francisco's legends of ghost sightings, from Al Capone on Alcatraz to a grieving mother who still wanders Golden Gate Park. Let's start with some wild tales of historical characters from the coasts of North and South Carolina. Terence Zepke has brought to life 13 notorious pirates in her book, Pirates of the Carolinas. She relates stories of ships weighted down with gold, crews too drunk on rum to fight, treacherous colonial officials, mutineers, privateers, and the sad end of the line for the pirates who got caught. Ahoy, Terence. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Give us some background on this. What was the golden age of piracy in the United States?
Well, we really don't know how long piracy has been around, but it's been around at least 2,500 years there. And there was an era during its heyday that was known as the Golden Age of Piracy. And that was the late 17th century to early 18th centuries. And
oh, I that's see. So when it's before the United States. It'd be colonial America.
It was colonial America when they came over here. And interesting, North Carolina had a lot of the officials had partnerships with the pirates. We were sort of a commerce-poor place back then, so we actually welcomed pirates like Blackbeard until they had the big crackdown on piracy, and that was the end of that.
So is that kind of the fine line between a privateer and a pirate? What's the difference?
It was such a fine line, Rick. Basically, a little piece of paper, because a lot of the pirates started out, they were privateers, and they were involved in Queen Anne's War, wars all over Europe and everything, and they were commissioned to attack enemy ships in order to get money, to get booty to help fund the war. And they split that money with the crown.
So, yeah, so the king or the governor would say, you are licensed to attack ships as long as they're not our ships, and you can keep half the booty, but you got to give the rest to us so we can fight our war or whatever.
Right. And so then imagine when the war is over and your navy is no longer needed like that. Well, this is all these men have ever known. There's no employment. You know, it was a fine line anyway between privateer and pirate, so a lot of them just became officially pirates.
And they got to keep everything.
Yeah.
Nice business model. So now, what was the basic action? It was mostly ships going from Europe to the Americas, or where did they get their best opportunities?
At that time, it was all these merchant ships that were doing these trade routes. And so you could just sort of sit out there. It was just like fishing and just pluck them off. They weren't very well armed or anything. They were slow because they were big, heavy ships with a lot of merchandise on board and all. So, and it really didn't matter. This was one of those falsehoods that people realized. People thought pirates just wanted gold and pieces of eight. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that they wanted what they could sell. So when they got these merchant ships and they had all these realms of fine linens and silks and tobacco and rum and all, this was pay dirt.
Oh, so they would get this stuff and then they would go to the next port and just, like you see when you travel a lot, people stealing stuff off of ships and setting up a little stand and selling it cheap.
Absolutely. Huh. And that's what they did. And then, like I said, a lot of them were in partnership with the authorities here. And so when they came into port and all that, they would look the other way and then they would get a cut. We're looking the other way, and the merchants would get discounted goods. The pirates would get money. I mean, everybody was happy.
Sounds like a win-win-win-lose situation. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Terence Zepke, and her book's called Pirates of the Carolinas. We always think Pirates of the Caribbean, and your book is Pirates of the Carolinas. Why was there so much pirate action in the Carolina coast?
Well, at that time, these were pretty poor states, so we needed to get commerce wherever we could, so pirates were good for business. So we sort of were a safe haven for pirates. In fact, Blackbeard, who was one of the probably the biggest chapter discussed in this book, he actually set up shop, actually made a home, and actually came part of the community and all up in North Carolina.
Now, he sounds like an incredible guy, and he's got this treacherous image, but according to your book, he never actually killed anyone. Because people surrendered when they saw his flag. He was so had such a ferocious image.
I think marketing majors should study Blackbeard, because back before that anybody knew what PR, marketing, promotions was, this guy was on top of it. He knew that reputation was everything. So he didn't have to do much fighting because his reputation preceded him. So as soon as he ran up his flag, people surrendered because they weren't going to take on the great Blackbeard.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was tall, dark, and handsome. He was like 6'5", and he had pistols and cutlasses and everything draped all over him. And then before he would go into battle, he would light these fuses in his hair so that when he landed on the ship, there's this smoking huge guy with all these guns hanging off of him, dressed in black with this black beard and everything. So it gave, you know, quite a presence and would give him the element of advantage.
And people would just say, take all my valuables, but just don't kill me. Yeah. And consequently, he never had to kill anybody.
Yeah, well, he did some stuff, too, to help his reputation. He actually took on the Royal Navy one time and defeated them.
Huh.
And pirates tended to stay away from the Royal Navy because they just weren't gonna win when you went up against the Royal Navy.
Yeah.
But Blackbeard did, so that helped fuel his reputation.
He must have been a fun guy to work for, I guess. He's not just a Johnny Depp kind of fantasy, though. He's a real guy. And as a matter of fact, you write about there's a permanent Blackbeard exhibit in the North Carolina Maritime Museum. Tell us about that.
Yeah, in Beaufort, North Carolina, they actually have found what they almost certainly believe, you can't say for certain, but it's pretty certain based on their evidence, that this was the Queen Anne's Revenge, one of Blackbeard's flagships, and it sank off the waters of Beaufort Inlet. And so they've been excavating this ship for many years now, since I think 1996.
Wow.
It's an ongoing process. And so as they get things they bring up from the ship and all, they are cleaning them and preserving them and then putting them on display. At this facility. And it's a great place to learn about the North Carolina coast, about piracy, about maritime history.
You also talk about pirate tours of Charleston. How's Charleston associated with piracy, and what do you see there?
Oh, Charleston was a big hangout for pirates back in the day. They had lots of places that they liked to come into shore, come into port, and drink and be merry. And actually, also, there were a lot of hangings of pirates that took place in South Carolina as well. And you can actually go on your own or as part of a tour and see White Point Gardens, where some of the pirates were hanged. That was a big thing back in the day, was they actually did public hangings, and it was supposed to discourage piracy. You know, they would leave them up for a long time and put them in these things called gibbets, which were custom-made cages for their bodies and all. So you get a real good history if you do the pirate walk. There's a really good one in Charleston. There's just about every kind of walk and tour option you can imagine in Charleston, including the Pirate Walk.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking Pirates of the Carolinas with Terrence Zepke. Terrence, I love this. You put a stanza from one of these pirate songs, and it's, "Some fight 'tis for riches, some fight 'tis for fame. This first I despise, and the last is a name. I fight 'tis for vengeance. I love to see flow, at the stroke of my saber, the life of my foe." How bloody were the pirates actually?
Oh, it could get pretty bloody because you're fighting to the end, you know, once you engage in battle. Blackbeard, when he actually finally reached his end, when the Royal Navy actually finally did beat him, it was considered to be the bloodiest battle in pirate history. And he sustained more than 24 gunshot wounds and cutlass wounds and all that before he was finally beheaded.
Lay the groundwork for the battle. Why and where and what happened?
Up in the Outer Banks. And this is really interesting. Some recent history has revealed that we believe that Blackbeard actually was tipped off, that Lieutenant Maynard with the Royal Navy was hot on his trail, and he had opportunity to get out of there. And he believed that he knew the waters, knew the land, and was a better fighter, and he convinced himself he could defeat the Royal Navy. And the ship was just covered in blood from, you know, because the men all fought to the end, you know, because they know if the Navy captures you, you're going to be tried and hanged.
Right.
So you've got nothing to lose to fight to the end. And so they were all in with it, you know. And actually, they had told Lieutenant Maynard he needed proof that he actually killed Blackbeard. So he had to behead him and bring the head back to Virginia so that his superiors would believe he did indeed kill the legendary Blackbeard.
And he did that.
Yes, he did that.
And what happened to the head of Blackbeard?
We don't know.
Ooh, there's a ghost story for you. What I found particularly interesting in your book, Pirates of the Carolinas, was the story of women pirates, particularly Anne Bonny, who you said is your favorite pirate. Tell us about her, and why is she your favorite?
Well, because I think in earlier times, if I had had her choices, I would have done exactly what she did. And I have an Irish background. I have wild, long red hair. I was rebellious and everything. So I think I can relate to Anne Bonny. But she was actually from a very affluent family. Her father was a wealthy planter, a businessman, merchant and everything. At that time, of course, they prearranged marriages so you could marry into another suitable family. And so he had arranged for her to marry this fella who she barely knew, and he was very boring. And she was supposed to, you know, do all the things that women did at that time where you threw parties and, you know, knitted, that kind of stuff. And Anne Bonny just said, this is not the life I want. And she ran off to sea and became a pirate. So that was kind of a really interesting thing. Now, of course, she couldn't openly be a woman pirate. She had to disguise herself. And it was a very long time before anybody realized that she was actually a woman before that came out. And by that time, she'd proven herself to the crew and nobody gave a problem. But women weren't allowed on the ships back then. So a lot of these women pirates were actually disguised, you know, because there were boys, young men and everything. So it wasn't too hard to disguise themselves on these ships.
Yeah.
You know, they taped their breasts so that they would, you know, and they wore loose clothing, and they weren't showering hygiene things on the ships.
So you couldn't really tell.
They looked a lot like the boys that were there that helped load the cannons and things. These boys, they didn't have any facial hair or anything, so they looked, you know, they could pass.
Tough women. Thinking of Anne Bonny and the gentlemen pirates like Stede Bonnet that you write about, it wasn't just looting and plundering. There was more to that among these pirates.
Yeah, they were a brethren. They may have been misfits, outlaws, criminals, whatever, in society, but once they came on the ship and became a part of the crew, they had each other's backs, and, you know, they became much more than pirates. They were living life on their own terms. This was about freedom. Whatever life they would have had on land, they've come out here, and they can work when they work. They can party when they want to party. They can, I mean, they had musicians on board, and, you know, they knew how to live large, and they knew that they probably would die, so they lived as well as they could in what was probably going to be a very short life for them because of piracy.
So they knew they probably had short lives.
They did, but they lived it hard and fast while they were still here.
Hanging from the rigging, singing yo-ho-ho.
And a bottle of rum.
Terence Zepke, thanks a lot. And we all know a little bit more now about Pirates of the Carolinas. The folklore of Ireland is full of reports of beings they call fairy folk who can cause havoc if you mess with the trees and the stones they're said to inhabit. Up next on Travel with Rick Steves, we learn about the fairies of Ireland with Stephen McPhillamy and Barry Maloney. And they'll take your calls at 877-333-7425. By email, we're at radio@ricksteves.com.